Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we begin week 7 in the NFL. That begins tonight in Interstate Rival. Or rivalry, I should say. Cincinnati and Cleveland. It'll kick things off the 7th week in professional football. It's going to be a busy night right here at Mr. Chubby's. We are in Pontevedra. Come on out. Myself along with RJ Saunders. As I just Cleveland versus Denver. Excuse me tonight. I don't know why I thought Cincinnati. It's clearly Denver with Vic Fangio and his football team. At 3-3, and you know, you look at Cleveland, no Baker Mayfield tonight. So we had the 31st quarterback that Cleveland has run out there, I believe, since the year 2001. I remember doing that a couple of years ago, talking about the quarterbacks. I'll actually share that with you coming up here momentarily. But Mayfield's got a labrum problem. It's a matter of not if, but when. That surgery is going to take place. Will rest be enough for him to be able to turn things around and play next week, or does he have to go under the knife? We will see. But he's out. Their top two backs are out. Their slot wide receiver is out. We're waiting officially to find out if OBJ will go tonight. Plus, Cleveland is missing their starting left and right tackle. So very interesting to see what will happen. That is going on later tonight. We have an opportunity for the Braves to clinch. Unbelievable. Joe Kelly on the bump tonight for the Los Angeles Dodgers. I always loved Joe Kelly for what he did a couple of years ago with Boston. He was phenomenal that year coming out of the bullpen when the Red Sox beat the Dodgers. But Joe Kelly, for the most part, has been a guy that they've called upon to get an out here and out there. Obviously, the rules have changed where you no longer can bring a guy in just for an out. He's got to give you at least, three. You got to face at least three batters, and he has done that effectively this year, has Joe Kelly. But here's a guy with 80 career starts. So, you know, we've seen it before from him in St. Louis, in Boston. He actually made a start last year in 2020 in Los Angeles, and he made six starts back in 2016. So, you know, Joe Kelly is no stranger to being in big games. He is also no stranger to being a starter. Got to believe tonight, the way that Dave Roberts is lining everything up, you know, if he can do whatever it takes with all hands on deck, then you could turn around and go to Max Scherzer, in game six. But we'll see. 3-1, Atlanta on top of things. Right now, they will go with the lefty, Max Fried. Of course, that'll be on tonight. College football on tonight. The NBA on tonight. The National Hockey League on tonight. So what more could you possibly ask for? It's going to be right here, 40 television sets at Mr. Chubby's. Absolutely incredible. We invite you to come on by. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite, $3 Wells, and $3 wine. So we certainly are looking forward to that. All right, with the NFL, you know, it's really intriguing in my opinion, because, you know, I just gave you some of the numbers and what's going on with Cleveland, and I think you would just assume that, you know, Denver shows up tonight, they play well, they get themselves a victory. It hasn't been that way so far in the NFL. It's been a very unpredictable type of season. It's been pretty bizarre so far, where by a clip of a couple of games, the road team actually has a better record than the home team. Jacksonville was involved in yet another one of these games this past Sunday in London, all right, winning on the final play of the game. We have now had 23 contests that have either been decided in the final minute of regulation or in overtime. 23. We've never had a start like that ever in the history of the NFL. We have also had, so far in 6 weeks, 11 overtime games. There's been at least one overtime game in every week during the season. And it's very top-heavy right now, particularly in the NFC. You just look around, you see Arizona 6-0. They're the only undefeated team left. Are they the best team right now in pro football? Who knows? And, you know, at this point, I think it's about attrition. It's about, you know, playing very good football, certainly at home, trying to win as many as you can on the road. But, I mean, for those of you who do forget, all right, Tampa Bay was 7-5 last year through 12. So getting out to a 6-0 start is huge, but it's about being able to maintain. And, you know, you look at the NFC, you got the Bucs at 5-1. You got the Cowboys at 5-1. You got the Packers at 5-1. Then you got a wild card team. Of course, those are from the four divisions. You've got a wild card team in Los Angeles, that being the Rams, who are also at 5-1. So it's really impressive what you see right now with those dominant teams in the NFC. When you get to the AFC, you know, not so fast. Baltimore's 5-1, and it's ridiculous what, you know, they have been able to do so far with Lamar Jackson. But with a record of 5-1, you know, that is the best overall in the AFC. Who's the second best team? Quick, who is it in the AFC? Who is it right now? You may give me Buffalo, right? Well, Buffalo made some coaching blunders. They made some mistakes on the field, and they just lost a game this past Monday night, as we saw, at Tennessee. Buffalo's 4-2, yet their point differential is 105 in six games. I mean, how does that happen? 105 points, they have scored more than they have allowed, yet somehow, somewhere, they find themselves only at 4-2. Right here in the division that the Jaguars obviously do play in, Tennessee on top of things at 4-2, Indy 2-4, and then Jacksonville tied with Houston at 1-5. The Jaguars will enjoy their bye this week. And, you know, I think you can really make a case that the other three teams who are playing in the AFC South will all lose this weekend. Kansas City goes into Tennessee. Kansas City has really been mired by turnovers. I mean, they're second worst in the NFL. The only team that has more turnovers right now than Kansas City are the Jacksonville Jaguars at minus 10 total through six games. Love Kansas City going into Tennessee, though, you know, Sunday at 1 o'clock. We just mentioned Arizona. They're 6-0. This has got a college football line to it. They're a 17.5-point favorite. That is not supposed to happen in the NFL. I talked about this briefly last night. You know, there are three games this week in the NFL where most lines are three or less. You get occasional, you know, 7-point games, maybe six and a hook. But you have three college football lines this weekend in the NFL. Three of those teams I mentioned, three of the five from the NFC. When you look at Houston going all the way out to Arizona, Cardinals favored by 17.5. The winless Lions go all the way out to Los Angeles to take on the Rams. You're talking about a 16-point favorite there for L.A. The Bucs going to Tampa Bay. All right, Chicago 3-3, playing some pretty good football. Justin Fields getting more acclimated. By the way, this game is going to have the largest difference in age between two starting quarterbacks, historically speaking, the biggest separation in the history of the NFL. If you look at Brady at 44, and I want to say Justin Fields is 22 years of age. Tampa favored by 12.5 in that one. So, you know, we don't, even as bad as Jacksonville's been, you know, when they lost 20 in a row, there's not too often where you have lines that are that significant, that big. And that is the case with these three teams in the NFC. I also believe that Tom Brady, we all remember what happened last year. You know, went out to Chicago, forgot how many downs he had. I didn't shake Nick Foles' hand at the end of the game. Massively criticized for that. This one is back in Tampa, so we'll see what ends up happening. And then finally, it's Indianapolis. Good and bad news for the Colts. Okay, it looks like Quentin Nelson is going to be able to return and play for Indianapolis coming up this weekend. He's truly one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL, certainly the best left guard in the NFL. But the Colts, it was announced earlier today, they do lose free safety Julian Blackman for the season. He has suffered a torn Achilles. So, you know, you look at it that way, basically anything is on the table. And, you know, this league, to me, is really fascinating because we stress defense all the time. It's always discussed in the NFL that, you know, defense is going to win you championships. Even the Jags last week, right, what did they allow? 434 yards, something crazy like that. They were in bend but do not break mode. They made plays when they had to in the second half of the game. And the statistics don't necessarily support that, but the eye test does. And if you remember the game and you watched it, you know, they came up big defensively. But what we continue to see now in pro football more than perhaps we have ever seen, and I know that this trend has gone this way the last half dozen years or so, the best teams are, for the most part, the teams that score a lot of points. And you can defensively also give up a fair share and win. I mean, consider this, because I was doing it earlier today. You look at the six best records in the NFL. The six teams that average 30 points a game. Technically, the Los Angeles Rams average 29.8. I'm going to round it up to 30. I hope you do not mind. But look at this. Dallas, highest scoring team in the NFL, 34.2 points. They're 5-1. Buffalo, as I said earlier, it's ridiculous. Their plus-minus ratio or point differential is 105 through six games. They score 33.8 points a game. They're 4-2. Tampa scores 32.5 points a game. They're 5-1. Arizona's fourth. They score 32.3 points a game. They're 6-0. The one that kind of blows this out of the water is Kansas City, but they've really struggled defensively. They're getting 30.8 a game. They're only 3-3. And then I gave you the Rams at 29.8, 5-1. So, all right, what are you getting at, Baloo? Well, the teams who score the most points have the best records in the NFL. And you would think that typically that would be the case defensively, right? Not necessarily, okay? Outside of Buffalo, who's allowing 16.3, okay? In Arizona, who's allowing 18.2, all of a sudden you look at teams like New Orleans. They're third in defensive points allowed. They're only 3-2. Tonight, Denver on the field trying to win against an injured Cleveland team. 3-3 on the year, yet they only allow 18.3 points a game. Cincinnati at 4-2 allows 18.5. Carolina at 3-3 allows 20 a game. Chicago allows 20.7 a game. They're 3-3. So what does that mean? What does that say to you? We spent all our time here analyzing this game. We spent all our time here looking forward. You know, what are the Jags doing? What do they need to improve on? What moves must they make in free agency? What moves must they make in the draft to try to find a way to get better? I was in a deep conversation last night with Denny Thompson about how the Jags don't have a true number one wide receiver. And my thought was, man, I don't want to overspend for a wide receiver. They're bigger holes. You need a left tackle. You need another cover corner. You certainly need a guy off the edge. But if you look at it, the data's here. The data supports outscore your opponent. And you can win comfortably in this league by giving up 20-some-odd points each and every game, as long as you're able to get it done on the offensive side. Granted, I do spend a little bit too much time every once in a while on numbers, but I love applying them to the games that we watch. I think they absolutely come into play. And this league, again, continues to show us that you have to outscore your opponent. Defense is almost, I don't want to call it fringe, okay, but you need a quarterback. You need an explosive offense. Well, Jacksonville has. their quarterback. Explosive offense, not quite yet, but it is escalating. For those of you who are wondering, Jacksonville offensively right now, 19.3 points a game. All right. That is what they are scoring. Defensively is actually a little bit better. If you look at what they did a year ago when they allowed a franchise high 30.8, they're now allowing 28.7. So they've improved that by a couple of points on the defensive side. Opening comments, as always, brought to you by my good friend Lou Bodie over at Capital Financial Strategies. He's an investment specialist and senior financial advisor for the last 20-plus years right here in Jacksonville. His practice is centered on financial planning and education for his clients. This includes strategies on investments and retirement. Give Lou a call today, 626-7995. The only mistake I ever made was not getting to Lou earlier. It's unbelievable what he has done for me. He can do the same thing for you. It's time to watch your money grow. It's a free call, free consultation. I mean, take advantage of this. Sit down with Lou and see what he can do for you. The number for Lou Bodie is 626-7995. All right, fill up the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures, 641-1010. Come back, got a little bit more on the Jags, including members of the media, members of the NFL, popping off on this fan base and on this team. I don't understand it. 20 or so minutes away, we'll go to Hogtown. Let's get the latest on Dan Mullen. Let's get the latest on the Gator quarterback situation. I mean, why haven't they announced Anthony Richardson? I guess the flip side would be, why? Why tell Georgia? I mean, look at Oklahoma did last week with Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams. They legitimately waited until kickoff to announce that the true freshman was going to play. But I know some Gator fans are up in arms about this. So Zach Goodall in about 20 minutes will give us the very latest on the Gators as well. Sticks in the background? Dennis DeYoung in the background? Are you kidding me? Two-for-one drafts, two-for-one pitchers? That includes Miller Lite? Where are the people, R.J. Saunders? Where are the folks here at Mr. Chubby's and Bonavita?
We saw it last week. Once the games get started, that's when everybody starts flooding in, and a lot more people were talking to you once we were watching the Tampa Bay game. So I give it about 30 minutes, an hour. Then you're going to start seeing everyone come in, listen to Into the Night with Rick Ballew, and then want to hang out with Rick following the show to watch some games.
I'm going to go ask this fine lady right here if she'll have a slow dance with me during this song. We'll take a break. This is Into the Night.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, tonight's show brought to you by Key Buick GMC. Outstanding incentives continue in the month of October. Don't forget, though, with the holidays upcoming, it's time to get your vehicle serviced, and they are your service headquarters. It's fast. It's convenient. All right, so with the holidays coming up, and, of course, you got a lot of traveling ahead of you, make sure you go ahead and give them a call, Key Buick GMC, as always, complimentary pickup and drop-off. Over there with my buddy Jeff Moore. Okay, that is it. Key Buick GMC, right across the street from Southside, there on, or Tinseltown, Southside and Gate. All right, you know, there's been some shots fired today. Actually, I think it was Keyshawn Johnson did it yesterday. And Jason Kelsey, you know, a center for Philadelphia today. And, you know, I don't mind taking shots at others. I think it's part of it. I just myself went off on those Tennessee Volunteer fans who were just absolutely disgusting. Okay? It was an abomination. And by the way, the penalty that has been set by the SEC and Greg Sankey doesn't nearly fit the crime. And that's why we're going to have these problems again. But, you know, I've always had my fun with Tennessee fans. They're incredibly ignorant. And they, in my world, are the classic wrestling jobber, and I've explained that time and again, where, you know, the wrestling jobber comes in and has the crowd behind him and thinks they're going to win and acts like he's going to win, and all of a sudden, you know, the heel gives him a Pearl Harbor or gets a foreign object or does something like that and goes out and wins the match, and then Tennessee sits there with their mouth wide open. I've also had my fun with Cleveland fans over the years, okay? So it's one thing for a host or a fan to do or say something. It's another, I believe, when it's a player. And in this case, you know, Jason Kelce is basically trying to defend his city. He's trying to defend Philadelphia. He's trying to defend his fans. You know, he was asked about Zach Ertz and all of that type of stuff. And you know, so answer it any way that you want. But to be totally uninformed and to come out and say that, you know, Philly's not tough. It's tougher in Jacksonville than it is in Philadelphia because in Jacksonville, nobody cares. The line has to be drawn there. And that's where I have a problem with this. And I believe it's media-led. The media has always been this way. They have absolutely been uninformed. They have been lazy. Again, they look at Jacksonville, national media-wise, the way that when I go to the SEC meetings, I'll look at Mississippi State. Or if I go to the ACC meetings, the way I'll look at Duke. You know, it's kind of like, do I really have to talk about Duke? Do I really have to go up and listen to what Mississippi State has to say? No. The feeling is, I want to hear what Florida's saying. I want to hear what Georgia's saying. I want to hear what LSU and Auburn, Alabama. Who cares about Mississippi State? That's the way a lot of people treat Jacksonville. So it's one thing to pick on this team that has been a perennial loser, okay? It's another to pick on the fan base. A fan base that is phenomenally supportive. I've seen them on the road this year in droves and droves and droves, and certainly at home. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not allowed. You can't take a shot like that without there being a response from those who really do care. I mean, I was talking the other night, what was it, game three, where the Braves had a sizable lead. They were five outs away from knocking off the Los Angeles Dodgers at Chavez Ravine. And, brother, it's the sixth inning. And the stadium is empty. Everyone in Los Angeles said, screw this. We're down three. We're down four runs. We'll never come back. We'll never win. They all left. They left the ballgame in the fifth or sixth inning. And they're in the National League Championship Series. This is an organization that has been losing game after game, year after year. If you want to rip the team for making poor draft decisions, free agency decisions, trade decisions, coaching decisions, front office decisions, fine. That's on the table. But you can't rip the fans. You can't say that the people here do not care. That's just wrong. And, you know, I don't even know who Jason Kelce is. To be honest with you, about half the day I thought it was Travis Kelce. I'm like, what the hell is Travis Kelce out in Kansas City commenting on Jacksonville for? And then I went back again and finally read the story and saw that it was Jason Kelce. Kelsey's trying to bridge his gap with his fan base. You know, he took shots at Ben Simmons today. By the way, Ben Simmons has tightness in his back. He's doing exactly what Jalen Ramsey did here a few years ago. He's not going to play for the Philadelphia 76ers. He's faking an injury, and that is just awful. You know, there's a man who deserves to be criticized, just like Jalen deserved to be criticized here. I have no problem with criticizing players. No problem with criticizing coaches. If the fans do something stupid, like Tennessee Volunteer fans did last week, then they deserve to be criticized. But just to come on out and take a shot at Duval is very disappointing to me as far as I am concerned. All right, I want to get to this because I do want to get out here on time. to bring in Zach Goodall and talk about the Gators. But I want to get to the other side of the equation about Keyshawn Johnson, who, if you saw that clip, not only was he totally uninformed, he was really rude. Take it from me, I don't like being interrupted. And Dan Orlovsky kept trying to make a point in defense of Jacksonville, and he was just getting shredded by Keyshawn Johnson, who was yelling and frankly had no idea what he was talking about. But let's save that for a little bit later on in the program. I want to get to the very latest here on the quarterback situation for the University of Florida. If you want to respond to anything you just heard, including the comments made by Philadelphia center Jason Kelsey, as always, the best way to get a hold of us is on Twitter, Baloo1010XL, or you can get us on the text line, which is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. That number is 641-1010. So we got a lot to do tonight. We're going to be with you up until 8 o'clock. Let's shift gears momentarily. Let's get the very latest on the Gators. We'll head to Hogtown next. Zach Goodall joins Rick Baloo as we go into the night. We're broadcasting live, by the way, as you can hear. I mean, we're playing all the hits tonight. I mean, we just went from Styx to Guns N' Roses, and I'm loving it. They usually play a different style of music here at Mr. Chubby's, okay? I don't know what it's called, but it has something to do with scrapping the crap off the bottom of your shoe type of music. They're not playing that here tonight. They're playing classic rock. I feel a little extra juice because of it. Let's go to Hogtown next. We're live from Ponte Vedra's Mr. Chubby.
Into the Night with Rick Baloo on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, tomorrow with high school football still going on, we'll be on 3 to 6 tomorrow on the AM. That's 1010. So tomorrow from 3 to 6, I look forward to talking with you then. We'll do that for another, 4 or 5 weeks? Actually, I won't be with you a week from Friday because we're leaving for Seattle, the matchup out there between the Jags and Seattle on Friday. So, but after that, I think, 2 or 3 more weeks, and then we'll get back to our regularly scheduled program on both the AM and FM, which is 92.5. All right, big night around here. We got baseball, we got football, we got college football, we got the NBA, we got the NHL, we got golf. I mean, I'm looking at college soccer. I'm looking about everything. I mean, what a time for sports. And we're broadcasting live from Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite, $3 Wells, $3 Wines. All right, Gators are off, as we know, this weekend before the huge game here next Saturday, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It'll be Florida and Georgia. Let's get the very latest on the Gators. Zach Goodall joins us. And, of course, he does it all for the Gators. Just go to SI. All Gators, and you can get everything from Zach Goodall, who joins us on the program. Zach, how you been?
How Mr. Chubby's is. I've not gotten to check that place out since Bogey Girl was there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very nice, no question about it, and it's refurbished, and it's very clean, and it looks good. So next time in town, you got to come on by here and take a look at it. All right, what's the vibe been like, Zach? Everything that I'm gather, it's been a lot of questions, a lot of backlash, and everything that's happening now with Florida after the way they've played on the road, their last couple of games.
You know the gif of the animated dog, and he's sitting in a house where it's burning, and he just sits there and says it's fine.
Yeah,
that's seemingly Dan Mullen right now. Florida's lost, been upset twice in the past 3 weeks to Kentucky and LSU. I mean, you saw it. It was not the brand of football that Florida has, become accustomed to under Dan Mullen entering year four, especially. They're supposed to be on the up and up. They went to the SEC championship for the first time under his watch last year. And, people thought this season that there was a chance, even though they're a young team, that, maybe they wouldn't make it back, but they'd at least be in contention. And here we are 7 games in. Florida's completely out of contention for the SEC championship. at least in the East at this point. It would take an absolute miracle for them to get there. And at the same time, you know, Dan Mullen's sitting around and he's saying that he plans to evaluate what the Gators' issues are. That's his favorite word, is just to evaluate. When it comes to the Gators' defense, their run defense, the quarterback situation, which I'm sure we're going to talk about,
right.
Just, you know, I don't know any better way to sum it up. It's just kind of lackadaisical almost. It feels like there's not a ton of urgency.
Yeah, and we're going to spend the majority of our time certainly on the quarterbacks. But, you know, let's get to this run defense real quick. I could not believe what I watched LSU do running for 321 yards. You know, I'm sitting there in my bar in my house knowing that LSU was going to run the ball. Florida had to have known that they were going to run the ball, and they still couldn't stop it.
It didn't make much sense. I mean, I don't want to say that Florida's defense has been perfect this year, because it has. Definitely not. They've had struggles throughout the year. But you look at this defense, you compare it to the one that we talked about a good bit last year, it was drastically better. So I was just as bewildered as you were to see, I think the stat that's been floating around is LSU ran a counterplay, a guard tackle counterplay specifically, 14 times, averaged 13 yards per rush on those plays, scored all three of their touchdowns on the exact same concept. And even, you know, even the players, even Muhammad Diabate after the game, you know, he said that he made the adjustments he was supposed to make. He trusted his teammates to be in the right spot when he was asked in his, you know, comfort within the scheme, if he's confident in it. And that was pretty telling. You know, to me, that made it sound like they weren't really adjusting. There wasn't much coaching going into stopping the run. They just threw their players out there and expected them to change after LSU clearly exposed them. It didn't make much sense to me. I've written it. I've got no shame in saying that this game was a fireable offense for Todd Grantham.
Well, that was my next question, and Dan Mullen answered that question, and he's not going to make any changes in season. But this was a man who was quarterly on the hot seat, you know, last year, and has been on the hot seat, it feels like, ever since he got there. How is he surviving things right now in Gainesville?
He's worked with Mullen in the past. I mean, that's kind of been the thought, is that Mullen is loyal sometimes to a fault. And I'll give Todd Grant some credit. You know, his first 2 years, the defense was good. They stopped the pass. They got after quarterback. They were able to stop the run at least somewhat. But it's gotten worse and worse over the past 2 years. They're still missing tackles tremendously. I mean, it's the fundamental parts of football that these guys should be learning. And according to PFF, they're missing 11 tackles a game. That's just... it's never going to cut it. And like you said, Mullen said they don't plan to make any in-season changes. I wouldn't expect anything less. I'd figure, you know, if Grantham is not going to be back next year, it's because his contract runs out in January. They probably just won't renew it, at least in my opinion.
Talking to the Florida Gators, are off this weekend, but of course we'll have the game for you right here on the home of the Gators. That'll be next week against Georgia, that matchup right here in Jacksonville. Zach Goodall. Joining us from Gainesville, he covers the Florida Gators at Sports Illustrated. Just go to SI All Gators. All right, I want to be careful about how I say this, because this means a lot to me, and that's effort, and that's 110% each and every play. Talk with a couple of well-connected guys who to this program who thought that wasn't necessarily the case on defense. Even the great Elam, you know, Kyrie Elam, who could be a top 10 pick, top... you know, first-round pick. Some guys were questioning his effort. Is that wrong, or did you see any of that on the defensive side of the football?
I got to be the same way, careful. Because I don't want to accuse any players of that, but at the same time, you know, if this is the coaching effort that's going into developing these players to allow the exact same play to happen against you over and over and over again and make no changes to try and slow it down, how can you blame someone for not giving 100% effort when their coaches won't give 100% effort for you? You know, I don't necessarily know if that's the case. Maybe they were, and maybe they were worn out, because 300, however many over 300 rushing yards in a game, you're going to get tired and effort's going to start to lack. But I don't know. I don't know how anyone could be fully committed to this defense right now. I'll say that.
All right, Zach, and listen, I get it for Dan Mullen. If I was Dan Mullen, I wouldn't announce who my starting quarterback is. I mean, why? We saw it last week with Oklahoma. We waited, is it going to be Caleb Williams? Are you going to go back to Spencer Rattler? You know, Lincoln Riley waited until kick. So I would do the same if I'm Dan Mullen. But how can you run anyone out there to begin the game outside of Anthony Richardson after the four touchdown drives he led Florida on when he came in the game?
That's my thought, is that Anthony Richardson right now gives the Gators the best chance to win a game. Even though he's going to have his growing pains, he just can do things that Emory Jones can't do. And I want to give Jones some credit. I understand that, you know, turnovers have been an issue this year. He's very limited in what they can actually run within their offense. They can't just say, hey, go chuck the ball down the field. We know you'll put it in the right spot and make the right read. That's just not something he's proven. At the same time, you know, they acted like that. When they played Kentucky, Mullen ran an incredibly conservative passing game script throughout that game. Didn't try and get creative, just simple, you know, quick hitters. And Jones was pretty effective until he threw that interception in the fourth quarter when they finally tried to stretch the field a little bit. Like the timeout at the end of the first half where they wouldn't let him take chances and try and get the ball down the field with three timeouts.
Right.
If he's not getting that type of confidence booster, then how can you expect him to finally play hero ball at the end of the game and try and win you the game? I don't know. I mean, I look at Emory Jones, and I think that he's played a lot better on play action this year. By the numbers, he's completing like 3 to 5% more of his passes. He's throwing less interceptions per attempt. He's pushing the ball further downfield on play action, and Mullen's been reluctant to use it. So I get it. You look at Anthony Richardson, you look at what he can do, and I firmly believe that his skill set could win Florida games more so than Jones's. But I also look at coaching and say, why aren't you putting Jones in the best position to use his skills? I think that they've not done that this year.
So, you know, what are you hearing close to campus from people you're with? Because, you know, my social media and everything that I've got sounds a little bit like this. If Emory Jones runs out first and takes the team with the offense, these Gator fans they're going to boo that decision to begin the game.
They will. I'm sure of it. And I think Mullen has to start Richardson. I think that this is a potential tenure-defining decision that he faces at this point. And I think you have to take the risk. If you want to beat Georgia, you got to create explosive plays. Richardson can do that. Jones, not so much. But then again, someone made this point in the timeline today, and it was a fellow reporter, and I'm sorry for forgetting who it was. But, you know, the first start of Richardson's career, do you really want that going up against an absolutely insane Georgia defense that's allowing less than a touchdown per game, that's the number one team in the nation? Do you really want to potentially stunt Richardson's development by starting him in that game? I still teeter towards playing him on the first snap. Even if you give Jones reps throughout the game, he gives you the best chance to win. But I totally get that argument, too. You don't want to put a ton on his plate right in his first start like that.
All right, we are in an era now where if you lose, someone's got to go. And, you know, I was talking about it earlier. I know you covered the Buccaneers as well. You know, outside of Bruce Arians, man, you look at Manny Diaz, you look at Brian Flores, you look at Dan Mullen, you look at Urban Meyer, you look at Mike Norvell. They've all been under fire, and some still are under fire. So I understand that Dan Mullen got an extension, but if this thing bottoms out, if they get blown out here in a week and let's say they lose another one down the road, is there any chance that Dan Mullen does not return in 2022?
I mean, I think his seat is getting hot, if probably the best way I can put it. But with the extension, you know, with the fact that Florida was in the SEC championship this past year, and I know that it rings very similarly to Jim McElwain in that sense, but I still think that there is confidence in Mullen to right the ship within the program. It may not be unified, but I think that it's there to the point where the Georgia game probably won't move the needle. I think the expectation around here is that Florida is probably going to lose that game already. Now, what if Florida loses on the road to Missouri? What if Florida loses on the road to South Carolina or at home against Florida State? Then you suddenly start having those discussions. I mean, that is major regression. Those are three losses on the year, maybe more at that point if they lose multiple games that they're supposed to win in the final stretch of the season. You know, at least three games at that point that Florida is supposed to win on a yearly basis. And Mullen drops it. I mean, especially if he's just going to come back and say, we'll evaluate what the issues are with a lack of urgency. Then, you know, then you start to wonder. Then you really start to wonder.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad Tennessee's not on the schedule every week for Florida, because it doesn't matter who Tennessee has coaching or who they have playing, Florida finds a way to win that game.
Yeah, that's true. Even though Tennessee gave them a little bit of a fight this year, I like that offense that got brewing up there.
No doubt. Hey, Zach, always a lot of fun. Appreciate it. I know we'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Zach Goodall. Good stuff there. Appreciate Zach. Again, he does really good work for the Gators and the Bucks at SI. And you could follow Zach Goodall, Zach_Goodall. And go ahead and I liked his report card that he did. Demetrius Harvey, who we hear from quite a bit, who's the Jaguars beat writer for Big Cat Country, is also, as we talked about last week, he is the deputy editor for SI All Gators. So that's quite a staff with Demetrius Harvey and Zach Goodall. We appreciate having them on.
Absolutely. Have you talked with the Jaguars organization about changing your title, like deputy, deputy analyst or something along those lines? Have you talked to the Jags about that?
I plan to, but I didn't want to take anything away from the victory. It was a big week, and then after that, there was a lot of stuff that rolled in. It began with Matthew Wright getting AFC Special Teams Player of the Year. I didn't want to dominate the headlines there. Then Dewan Smoot delivered their second child right there in the living room. That was an enormous story. So I've kind of held back on it. But, yeah, I deserve more than just being considered sideline reporter. I'll never get a handle, though, as cool as Demetrius Harvey. I mean, Demetrius Harvey is the deputy editor. I mean, that is absolutely outstanding. If I could have been a deputy editor, I never would have gone the way of talk. I would have gone the way of scribe. I would have gone the way of a writer to get that type of title. But that's what's going on right now with Demetrius Harvey. All right, thank you to him. Thank you to Zach Goodall. Dan Mullen is 1-2 against Georgia. If he loses here in 10 days, he'll be 1-3. He's... 2-2 against Kentucky? 1-3 against LSU. You look at their Power 5 matchups dating back to, I guess, after the Vanderbilt game. Or after the Tennessee game of a year ago. I mean, really struggled. LSU, right? Oklahoma. Early on this year, not winning at Kentucky. I'm still shocked by that. And I thought Emory Jones played a good football game against Kentucky. But, it was interesting what Zach Goodall just said about not throwing someone in there against Georgia and that defense. I don't look at it that way. I never have with quarterbacks. That used to be more of a theory for bringing up pitchers too early in Major League Baseball. I mean, keeping down on the farm maybe an extra year or so. You don't want to bring someone up and have them get hammered by big league hitting. Nowadays, we're just seeing the explosion of quarterbacks all throughout the NFL and in college football, where freshmen play immediately. I mean, look at Caleb Williams. He's doing a Trevor Williams to Kelly Bryant at Clemson. I mean, he just is. Deshaun Watson, I mean, that he should have done that with the stout dude. I can't remember his first name at Clemson, but that was back during the days of Clemsoning for Dabo Sweeney. He continued to tinker with some things. I thought it cost him that game in Tallahassee that year when Florida State won in overtime, part of that 29-game win streak that the Noles did have. It was Cole Stout. Okay. Bring back Cole Stout, please. But I think you got to go with Anthony Richardson. I'd play him. You know, if it's a massive growing pain for him, then you take that with him. But I'm going to play the guy that I believe gives me the best chance to win. And we're seeing upsets every week in college football. Okay? We just saw Purdue over Iowa. We just saw Texas A&M over Alabama. Hell, Clemson's a 3-point dog at Pittsburgh this weekend. we're seeing upsets all across the place. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm going to pick Georgia. All right, I'm going to play chalk there. But Anthony Richardson, in my opinion, absolutely gives this team the best opportunity to win. All right, let's grab some of your reaction. Best way to get a hold of us is on the text line. That is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get me on Twitter, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL. Michael Phillips back in the studio. R.J. Saunders with Rick Ballou here. Let's get ready for our second hour. We are broadcasting live from Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite, $3 wells, $3 wines. Come on by. Say hello. Mr. Chubby's, Ponte Vedra.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, our second hour live from Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra. Having a great time. A lot of folks here. Still room for you. Bar right now is filled. We got two tables. Actually, third now if you got one with a booth over there as well. So room for you. Indoor, outdoor dining, 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite, $3 wells, $3 wines. All right. All three Mr. Chubby locations. I also want to tell you, this is your home for college football. It's your stop. ACC Network, got it. SEC Network, got it. Big Ten Network, got it. ESPN Plus, got it. If you're looking for a college football game, they're going to have it here. 40 television sets. Obviously, everything up in the NFL as well on Sunday. And that includes tonight. Now, you know, word is out that OBJ is going to play. Cleveland tonight, Case Keenum under center. It will not be Baker Mayfield. They're down their top two running backs. They're down their slot wide receiver and their top two tackles. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And since the year 2000, okay, I remember doing a thing for the Jaguars broadcast on this a couple of years ago when Jacksonville faced Cleveland, but it is now updated. You know, Baker Mayfield made 51 consecutive starts for Cleveland. They have now used 31 different quarterbacks since the year 2000. 31. All right, listen to this. Tim Couch, Ty Detmer, Doug Peterson, Spurgeon Winn, Kelly Holcomb, Jeff Garcia, Luke McCown, Trent Dilfer, Charlie Fry, Derek Anderson, Ken Dorsey, Brady Quinn, Bruce Gradkowski, Colt McCoy, Jake Delhomme, Seneca Wallace, Brandon Whedon, Thaddeus Lewis, Jason Campbell, Brian Hoyer, Johnny Manziel, Connor Shaw, Josh McCown, Austin Davis, RG3, Cody Kessler, Deshaun Kaiser, Kevin Hogan, Tyrod Taylor, Baker Mayfield, and Case Keenum, the start tonight for the Cleveland Browns. Isn't it great to... You're 1-5 in the city. I know it's not where anyone wanted to be. You know, I mean, it feels like this could be a 2-4 team. It could be a 3-3 team. It's 1-5. But doesn't it feel good to know that the quarterback situation is taken care of? I looked today at an early mock draft because I knew I was going to mention this, and I want a little bit of something to support what I was going to say. And I feel a little bit dumbfounded that I'm even talking about the draft this early, but I did it for this reason. This is not a good year for quarterbacks, okay? If Jacksonville was struggling at QB and they had to address something in the offseason, it could be a nightmare. And I think you can make the case. I was looking at teams across the NFL. In my opinion, there's 9 teams that could have a change at quarterback in the 2022 season. 9. 9 out of 32. But look at this, and obviously it's incredibly early. Look at this mock draft in how the quarterbacks set up, according to CBSSports.com, Chris Trapasso in his latest. For what it's worth, they have the Jaguars selecting first, and they had them getting Evan Neal, the tackle, out of Alabama. but you got to go all the way to the fifth pick in the draft where they have the Giants getting Malik Willis. Quick. Who's Malik Willis? Anyone. Show me your hands. Quarterback. Liberty. How would you feel right now if in this city you were talking about rolling out the dice for a quarterback out of Liberty? Okay. Seventh pick, Matt Corral. Very talented. I'm looking forward to that Ole Miss-LSU game coming up on Saturday night. I've watched Ole Miss play a lot of football. I just enjoy watching Lane Kiffin coach, and I enjoy watching Matt Corral pass. He's got some speedy wide receivers. But, you know, still. Then you got to go all the way down to, this is amazing here. I think it's pick 28. Carson Strong, quarterback, Nevada. Those are your top three quarterbacks listed right now. You know, Sam Howell's not on that list. Spencer Rattler's not on that list. Quarterbacks that we, JT Daniels is on, quarterbacks that were discussed during the, you know, the preseason. Nowhere to be found right now. It's a really down year for quarterbacks. So, you know, let's segue this back to, I already gave you my opinion on Jason Kelce. I thought it was below the belt, yet I've done it with other fans, and you've probably done it with other fans. If Kelce wants to go that way, that's fine. It's more ignorance. Just because the team has been bad, you don't blame the fan base, and that's what he did. The Keyshawn comments are a little bit more, I believe, disruptive, all right? They're just wrong. And listen, I like Keyshawn Johnson. I remember doing a show from his restaurant, Rain, in L.A. Years ago, early 2000s. It was a great. That was where Elton Brand was there with David Falk. Who was Michael Jordan's agent? Was it David Falk?
Yeah,
David Falk and Elton Brand. That's the same place where Carl Lewis was in the bar that night. I had Carl Lewis sit with me.
Didn't we have somebody on from the 49ers? You said we spoke to him, and you said that's where you guys had first spoken. I forget who it was.
Oh, it's the color analyst.
Yeah.
He used to do radio in Chicago. I can't even think of was it Ryan? Jeff Ryan, maybe. It'll come to me, but he was a former defensive end for the University of Southern Cal. And, yeah, he joined me out there live in person. Yeah, Tim Ryan. Yeah, and he did some work with Fox, and he did some stuff out there. But anyway, I've always liked Keyshawn, okay? And I read his book and all of this, and I always thought he'd be very good in this profession, talking. And, you know, I don't watch these shows on ESPN. I just don't. You know, I live on the NFL Network. But anyway, to make this story, you know, and to get right at it, he starts going after Trevor Lawrence. He's saying there's no difference between Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones and Zach Wilson and, quote, help my team win, not hype. He's saying that Trevor Lawrence is a hype machine, and that is a generational talent. Jacksonville should be better than 1-5. Now, we can go deep into the bowels here and point out what has gone right, what has gone wrong, what the mistakes that Trevor Lawrence has made, and everything else. But here's the bottom line, okay? This is a bad team. This is a bad roster. And he was the top pick for a reason. Jacksonville was 1-15 last year. They have holes and gaps all throughout their roster. Yet they're becoming a better team because they finally have a guy under center who was going to turn this franchise around. And Dan Orlovsky, I thought, was phenomenal. Now, it was about a three-minute clip, and Orlovsky spoke for maybe 20 seconds. Okay? He kept on getting interrupted by Keyshawn Johnson, and all that stuff kept happening, and Orlovsky couldn't get it out. But that was basically what he was saying, is that look at the roster, and look at what Trevor Lawrence is doing with this roster. Orlovsky went on to say the last three games, he believes Trevor Lawrence is in the top third in the league as far as quarterbacks. Okay, that's basically 10, right? 10, 11, 32 quarterbacks. I mean, right there in between. So that's really saying a lot. And, you know, when I listened to this, I thought it was a classic comment by someone in the media who doesn't watch the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you have an opinion that Jacksonville is not a good team, that is fine. If your opinion is that Trevor Lawrence is not playing good football, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. And if you're basing this on numbers, that's inaccurate too. All right? They've been down two offensive linemen. They've been down their their deep threat for three games now, and DJ Chark, it's just an unfair, or a couple of games now with DJ Chark. It's an unfair, it's an uninformed argument. And, you know, there's a fine line in all of this between arrogance and ignorance. Keyshawn Johnson likes Keyshawn Johnson. He needs to do a little bit more homework. If the producers say, all right, we're going to spend a minute today on Trevor Lawrence, he needs to do some research. He needs to be prepared if this is a talking point and they're going to go back and forth. Because he really embarrassed himself in front of a national stage. It's one thing to say that this is not a good football team. It's another in six games to say that Trevor Lawrence is a hype machine. In that his quarterback needs to win games and not be a hype machine. So, just my thought on it, all right? And again, it hasn't been perfect. Whoever said it was going to be perfect? There have been some mistakes by Trevor Lawrence. His last three games, he threw one pick. Final play of the game at Tennessee, here against Tennessee. And to Keyshawn Johnson, this is my point. To Keyshawn Johnson, that goes down as his eighth pick. To Keyshawn Johnson, that affects his quarterback rating by I have no idea how many points. But you know, as a Jag fan, the Jaguars media knows that was a meaningless play. The final play of the game, that turnover had no bearing on it. That had been a touchdown, he would have another touchdown. His quarterback rating would be up significantly. But my opinion, Keyshawn Johnson just looks at the numbers. And he sees that Trevor Lawrence has more picks than Mac Jones. That Mac Jones has a higher completion rating than Trevor Lawrence. Yet if you look at pass yardage attempted in the last 3 weeks, let me find it for you. I went digging for this earlier today because I knew that I would talk about it. In the last, in the last three games, okay, guess who has the largest yardage per attempt in the NFL? Trevor Lawrence, 8.1, all right? Aaron Rodgers, 8. Are these guys any good? Aaron Rodgers, 8. Kyler Murray, 7.9. Tom Brady, 7.8. Derek Carr, 7.9. Baker Mayfield, 7.5. Patrick Mahomes, 7.2. I might have said David Carr. It's Derek Carr. I might even have said it twice. That's how excited I am about this. 8.1. So that's my point, Keyshawn. Just don't look at the numbers. Do some homework on it. Okay, go back and watch some film. You can cheat now. You can go to the DirecTV package. I do it with every Jaguars next opponent. You can get the highlights broken down in 30 minutes. You know, you got access, I have to imagine, to the All-22 tape. Do a little bit of work. So, an embarrassment today, or maybe it was yesterday, I'm not even sure when it was, by Keyshawn Johnson here, not knowing what he is talking about. It's another example. If you're going to talk about this team, take it for what it is. I guess I don't say it often enough, and I should. But with this football team, you really need to trust the local media. You do. This isn't covering Cleveland and Denver like's going on tonight. I mean, those franchises have been around forever. Yeah, I know Cleveland left and came back, but you catch my drift here. They have national appeal. Okay? They've been in Super Bowls outside of Cleveland. Who hadn't been close to it in forever. Jacksonville is new. Jacksonville does not have a lot of members nationally who write or talk about this team who know what they're talking about. Keyshawn Johnson today is a prime example of that. All right, let's get some thoughts from you on it. 641-1010, that is your number. We'll come back, and I know I've been telling you to get us on the text line all night. Let's get to you here now on the other side. So the best way to do it is on the text line, 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get us on Twitter. That is Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, good crowd on hand here at Mr. Chubby's. My goodness, 7:23 and it's dark. Look at it outside, RJ. What's up?
It's that time change.
I know the time's going to change, yep. But yeah, I almost...
Time change era.
I was going to play golf at one place on Sunday, and the earliest tee time I could get was 3:43. I was like, nah, that's not going to happen. So instead I'm playing at 11. I want to be done in time for that Bucks game at 4:20, I guess it is, against Chicago. And I'll have to look at the schedule. I'm sure there's a couple of games that I'll tape that I'll want to go back and take a look at. I'm really excited about watching what New Orleans can do against Seattle coming up on Monday night. All right, before we get to reaction here by our listeners, as we do broadcast live for Mr. Chubby's and Ponte Beater, what do you got working tonight out on social media, RJ Saunders?
Absolutely. As we continue here live from Mr. Chubby's on a Thursday night, Rick Ballou into the night. We've asked this question, looking to get your reaction. You can either hit us up on the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosure, 641-1010, or simply go on Twitter at 1010XL. What have been your thoughts on the Keyshawn Johnson quote that he said about Trevor Lawrence? Also, what's been your thought on Travis Kelce's words on Jacksonville being a tougher place to play than Philadelphia? Want to get your thoughts on that. And 56% of the vote say, it doesn't bother me. Those words don't bother me. Sticks and stones.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Jason Kelce, what he said earlier today is just wrong. Again, because the organization has been poor, it doesn't mean it's a poor fan base. But you know what? Let him say whatever he wants. I mean, the guy's going to wake up tomorrow in Philadelphia. I don't know about you today. But in the middle of the afternoon, I went and hit some range balls and drove around in my beautiful Key GMC Sierra with all four windows down. All right? That's what we got here in Jacksonville. All right, let's get to some of your comments. Let's do that right now, yada, yada, yeah. I love how guys are asking for my Stanley Cup picks. I'm going to get to some hockey. I had hockey on last night. It was an awful night for Bostonians. Not only did the Red Sox get blasted last night, but the Bruins got doubled up by the Flyers. They got a couple of late goals. Michael Phillips, are you on that Philadelphia bandwagon now, or you've been a long-time Flyers fan?
I've been a Flyers fan since we went to a game. We visited some family up in Philadelphia that on my mom's side that in like 2013, 14. So I've been a fan since then.
Well, let me give you a free tip. If you want excitement, entertainment, and can't miss TV, YouTube old school fights between the Broad Street Bullies and the Big Bad Bruins.
Ooh, and I got to do that.
You will not leave it. Oh, my God. Fights from the 70s between the Flyers and Bruins were absolutely out of this world. All right, it is a little bit long-winded on numbers. It's an interesting point, though, another set of numbers. I don't have them, but what is the record of NFL teams when their defense has held opponents to 20 points or less? This could show perhaps that when teams' defense plays well, it is more likely they win. He goes on a little bit more into it. Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, better defense is going to help you win, but I started the show with this tonight. if you missed it, it's amazing how in today's NFL, you're much better off having a better offense than you are having a better defense. And the best example of that that I can give you is the top six teams right now in professional football in scoring are Dallas at 5-1, Buffalo 4-2, Tampa Bay 5-1, Arizona 6-0, Kansas City's only 3-3. You know, they're getting over 30 points a game, 30.8, so they would kind of blow up the theory. And then the Rams at 5-1. So the top six teams, and then, you know, even if you go down to number seven, it's Baltimore who's 5-1. So the top seven scoring teams in the NFL have those records. Yet you look at things defensively, and there are five teams, who hold their opponents to under 20 points a game. Buffalo and Arizona are at the top. They have the best defenses in the NFL. That absolutely defends the argument. They're allowing 16.3 and 18.2, respectively. But then it gets a little sideways on us. All right, New Orleans, third. They're allowing 18.2 points a game. They're 3-2. Tonight, Denver's playing. They're allowing 18.3. They're fourth in the NFL in points allowed. They're only 3-3. Cincinnati, 18.5, fifth in the NFL in points allowed. They're 4-2. Carolina allows 20.2 a game. That's sixth in the NFL. They're 3-3. The Bears are 3-3. They allow 20.7. So, yeah, and the only reason why I did this, and again, I'm being redundant to what I began the show with about an hour and 25 minutes ago, is there's always so much talk with this football team, and any football team for that matter, about how you need to get better, right? And we have spent forever discussing more points offensively, giving up less defensively. And I always bring up these numbers because last year they were historical. They were just terrible. Okay, the Jaguars allowed a franchise high, 30.8 points a game. They scored last year 19.1 points a game. That was 30th in the NFL. I mean, they were outscored by 186 points during the 2020 season. So, you know, always talking about positions and how do you improve offensively, how do you improve defensively. When I go back and look at these numbers now, it's evident to me that more emphasis needs to be on your offense to score more points compared to your defense to stop your opponent from scoring more points. Again, all you got to do is look at the teams who score the most amount of points. And I went and I did this today because of the conversation I had last night with Denny Thompson about how Jacksonville doesn't have a true number one wide receiver. And I've always been one of those guys, admittedly, who feels, you can get by. You don't need a number one, you know, Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee. You're going to be all right. You know, you're going to bring in Keelan Cole, you have D.D. Westbrook, you have D.J. Chark, you're going to be all right. I've always been one of those, you're going to be all right guys that, you know, define other positions. Get a shutdown corner, get a pass rush end, you know, get a solid middle linebacker, you know, obviously get tackles. That's always been my emphasis. But I really thought about it last night, and this absolutely supports the theory that Jacksonville has to get a bona fide game changer at wide receiver. And, you know, you look around the league. I watched that Dallas-New England game last week. What C.D. Lamb did was filthy. You know, Ja'Marr Chase, what he is doing early on this year as a rookie in Cincinnati is absolutely scary. And just look at these top teams. They all have quality wide receivers. And, you know, this is nothing against DJ Chark, who's hurt. But I'll be honest with you. I'm part of the camp now that says I can't give DJ Chark a lot of money. I can't bring him back. He has been injured in 3 of his 4 years. And I can't have that. That's his resume. He's the guy who's going to get injured. I think that it's going to be very interesting to see what this team does as well with Brandon Linder at the end of the year. As great as Brandon Linder is, okay, he's hurt every single year. He's played one 16-game season. You know, I think this football, you're talking about you have the guy who is going to change this football team around. You need to know that you're going to have a center out there every game. You need to know that you're going to have a number one wide receiver. So that's the only reason why I brought up these numbers, is it's changed in my opinion. I think Jacksonville has a number two wide receiver in Jones Jr. I think they have a number three wide receiver in Chenault Jr. And I think they got a slot guy now that you know, can do some nice things in Jamal Agnew, getting a little bit more burn in the last couple of games. But that has changed for me. I mean, just watching it with the naked eye, it has absolutely changed for me. This team now needs to score more. You know, I gave you last year's numbers just for the conversation. Offense last year, 19.1 a game. Defense, 30.8. 6 games in this year, there's not a drastic change for the Jaguars. They're scoring 19.3 points a game. So they're up 0.2 of a point, 6 games in. And they haven't scored more than 23 in a game. That was last Sunday in London. They've scored 21 twice. You and I both know they've left points on the field. Okay, so I would expect that to improve here during the final 11 games of the season. Defensively, Jacksonville has improved this year. They're allowing 28.7 a game, so that's an improvement of 2.1. Defensively, they've closed that margin a little bit. Not nearly where this team wants to be. You know, and just as well, let me say this to you. You look at defensive teams or very good football teams right now. Tampa Bay is 19th in defense. They allow 24 points a game. Okay? That's kind of my point. Now, Tampa Bay's defense was lights out. In the Super Bowl last year, as we know, against Kansas City. And they won that game in the ditch, both their offensive line and defensive line. Remember, Kansas City's offensive line was ripped apart. But, you know, look at these playoff teams. Tampa's 5-1. They allow 24 a game. Dallas is 5-1. They have the best offense in the NFL. Dallas has given up 24.3 points a game. Okay? Where Jacksonville goes next week, Seattle. This is a team that you can score on. They're giving up 25 points a game. So that's my point here. Jacksonville can't average 19.3. They got to start getting up into the mid-20s. And that's how you're going to win in this league. The leader of the division that the Jaguars are in the AFC South, Tennessee, they're 4-2. They're giving up 26.8 points a game. Go ask your daddy. Go ask your granddaddy. Back in his NFL, if you were allowing 27 points a Sunday, you were losing games. Teams are winning games now by allowing that amount of points. It's scary. Kansas City, you know they're going to make a comeback here. They're 3-3, okay? They're allowing 29.3 points a game. They can't stop anyone. So that's my point. I love watching the game evolve. I love watching things change. And I try to support my point on it if I really feel that way, you know, with data, with numbers, with accuracy here. I have not felt this way. Maybe I'm late to the party. Maybe I'm talking to listeners out there who are like, no kidding, Ballou, we've been saying this forever. Well, Travis Etienne's going to be part of that offense next year. You don't think he's going to be able to help out? I feel all of a sudden more comfortable about the tight ends on this football team. They have to get, absolutely, they have to go get a Ja'Marr Chase, a CeeDee Lamb, a Henry Ruggs. They have to go get one of these young, very talented wide receivers. That's what this team has to do. All right, much more from you, more on the text line as well. 641-1010 is the number. You can also get me on Twitter, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Max Fried on the bump tonight, the wrong armor for the Atlanta Braves. They'll try to clinch the championship in the National League and head on over to the World Series where Houston-Boston await, but I think it's setting up right now for an Atlanta-Houston World Series. The 92-25 nails it here. He said, Dan said it straight. He's talking about Dan Orlovsky. He said all those other teams that Keyshawn Johnson was talking about, for the most part, they traded up to get their quarterback. Yeah, mentioned Patrick Mahomes, etc. They were good already. The Jags had the first pick because they were not good. And that is accurate. I think that is a huge part of, you know, this conversation. Others are going to expect much better things out of Trevor Lawrence. I just cannot believe. I mean, is there anyone out there who is disappointed in what Trevor Lawrence has done? I know you're disappointed about a 1-5 record. I know you're disappointed that points have been left on the field. There have been, you know, issues early on with missed field goals, missed PATs, questionable fourth down calls, you know, bad coaching decisions, at least early on when, you know, Houston, 51 pass plays, 5 rushing attempts for James Robinson. I'm not immune to any of that. I get it. But can you honestly look at Trevor Lawrence, and I don't care what the numbers say, 6 games in and you don't see improvement on a week-to-week basis, and then ask yourself, how much better is he really going to get once you give him his weapons? And next year, one of those weapons already is here in Travis Etienne. And get yourself a number one wide receiver, and you know, then we got to spend a lot of time talking about this offensive line. When Jacksonville finds themselves in a good situation, financially speaking, and they could find themselves in a really good situation, financially speaking, if they make changes on that offensive line. I mean, 3 of their top 4 highest paid guys right now are Andrew Norwell, Cam Robinson, and Brandon Linder. And I think all 3, I don't have time left tonight. That's a 6-pack conversation on each guy here at Mr. Chubby's. All 3 of them are a 6-pack conversation. My guess is maybe one of the 3 returns next year. That would be my guess. Remember, there's no dead money to cut Brandon Linder. So, you know, we shall see. Let's grab some more here. Yeah. 1117 says, got to get a number one wide receiver. Not DJ Chark. Okay, yeah, I hate to pile on DJ. I hate to pile on anyone who is injured right now, but I just don't think that is the case, that you should do that. 28-35, Ballou to the Jags, give James Robinson a new contract. They don't have to, and I don't think they will. Okay, he's a rookie. He was undrafted. So it's not like it's a first-round guy where you got to sign him for – where he's got a 4-year, you know, locked-in deal, and then you can give him a 5th-year option. They can make some changes with him. As an undrafted free agent, I know that is different than a drafted free agent. For example, you can – let's say Trevor Lawrence is coming up on a deal. You can't sign Trevor Lawrence until after his 3rd year and when you get into March of that year. That's just the way that the CBA works. Now, Jacksonville could keep him around for 4. And you know, the whole Jalen Ramsey nonsense began with that. Jalen had 2 years remaining. And, you know, Jacksonville did tack on that 5th year. The one who comes into play right now for Jacksonville is Josh Allen. And was Josh Allen done enough where you want to give him the going rate as a pass rush defensive end, even though, in my opinion, Josh Allen is more of a complete defensive end? To answer your question, I honestly want to double check on undrafted rookie free agents and their second contract compared to drafted players and their second contract. I know for sure that drafted players have to complete 3 years, and then when the season begins again in March, you can start to talk about signing them, ripping up that fourth year and signing them to a future contract. That's a good question. Let me check on James Robinson, though. I honestly don't know the language there, because, you know, other undrafted free agents that this organization has had, they waited a long time to pursue that, you know, whether it was a guy like Allen Hurns, heck, Jared Wilson ended up being let go. I'm trying to think of some other unrestricted free agents that have signed here as of late. That's a good question, though. A couple more here before the top of the hour. 74-05, but you can't be 9 points. You can't be up 9 points at home and throw a pick six that changes the momentum. We lose that game. You can't go out hot, then go cold. Being up 14 points against Denver, where outside of the first drive, we couldn't tell if we had Jake Luton in or Trevor Lawrence. That is from the 74-05. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. We have officially found someone who is not high on Trevor Lawrence. Right there. Your point is accurate. Absolutely. But do you really believe that was all his fault? Seriously. I don't. And I remember each and every one of those plays and how things went in-game. No one ever said he wasn't going to make mistakes. I mean, we just brought up yards per attempt. 8.1. I mean, give Daryl Bevell credit. Give this organization credit that even though they don't have a bona fide deep threat, they're still throwing the football downfield. I mean, we've lived through quarterback after quarterback, offensive coordinator after offensive coordinator, where all this football team has done is dink and dunk. I mean, they're taking chances now. So, yeah, it's going to come with some turnovers. And, yeah, it's going to come with some mistakes. But I asked for one. We found one. Congratulations. The anti-Trevor Lawrence. I didn't think that they were out there. But they are. All right, let's pay our take our final break of the night. Why don't we do that? And then we'll come back here and set things up for Friday's show. We're going to be with you 3 to 6 tomorrow on the AM. That is 10:10 on the AM as high school football continues. Again, that'll be 3 until 6 tomorrow. Tim Brando, among others, will join us on a Friday afternoon. Final thoughts coming up next, live right here from Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, final moments, Mr. Chubbies. Thank you to them, as always. Love it out here. I know we're getting a little bit of feedback from the folks out around Fleming Island. We're going to be heading out there soon, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a couple of nights off drinking, save up my money, fill up my car with gasoline and drive all the way out there to Fleming Island. How does that sound?
You're saying you're going to drive tonight?
No, not tonight. Come in a couple on. Of weeks. So maybe I can hop in the 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Oh, you
want to
carpool with me?
I mean, listen.
Listen, I'm putting my pedal to the metal.
Have
by
you
guy.
Seen gas prices lately?
See!
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I have no problem with the gas prices. I have no problem with anything. All right? Outside of my teams, especially last night, Red Sox, Bruins, and Celtics losing. That was just awful. Looking forward to watching this game tonight. It'll be a good one here between the Braves and the Dodgers. How do you feel? You're against the brink. Can you win 3 straight ball games?
I shook Gibby's hand when I saw him. Said, great season.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of conceding here. Maybe the Dodgers can pull one more out, you know, don't want to have their season end at Chavez Ravine, but I think this series is over. The Dodgers are too banged up, and I think they, you know, just need some time to rest up, heal up, get after it next season. However, if they come back, you know, it's going to be a whole different RJ talking, but I've conceded the season.
Joe Kelly will go tonight for Dave Roberts. Joe Kelly had a start a year ago, and he had six starts in 2016, but he has 80 in his career. Still, though, I wonder how long they'll be able to extend him tonight. He's been primarily out of the bullpen the last several years. So maybe it's one of those games tonight where you look up and the Dodgers end up pitching six, seven, eight guys. I mean, that's what Houston did until they really settled down last night with Alvarez, who went eight innings in Houston's victory against Boston. The lefty Max Fried will go for the Braves. That game begins coming up at 8:08. We'll look forward to watching that. All right, tomorrow, also, as you know, Denver and Cleveland tonight. Case Keenum is playing. Baker is not going to go. Baker Mayfield tonight. They're also missing their top two backs, their starting tackles, and their slot wide receiver. I guess the understanding that I saw earlier is that OBJ is active. So he will be playing tonight. And there's a lot of talk that he could be moved before the trade deadline, which comes up on November 2nd. All right, tomorrow, 3 to 6. We've got a lot of good stuff planned on Friday. Want to get in some of these college football matchups. I still look at the fact that Pittsburgh is favored against Clemson. It just looks it looks massively out of control here. Clemson, an underdog, going to Pitt. And you know what? The number's right. Clemson has struggled. It just looks weird. No doubt. We'll talk to Tim Brando tomorrow. They got some other things scheduled. We'll look at the money. We'll hear from the Philly Rooster as well. Thank you to Zach Goodall for joining us tonight. Also to Michael Phillips back in the studio. Our producer on site and each and every night is RJ Saunders. I'm Rick Ballew again tomorrow. We'll do it 3 to 6 on the AM. That is 1010 XL. Have a great night, everyone.